The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
I'm joined by the newly elected leader of the Green Party, Roderick O'Gorman. Minister, congratulations on your appointment.
Mandy, thank you so much. I'm absolutely delighted to have been given this great honour by our party members and really humbled that they've put their faith, put their trust in me now in terms of succeeding Eamon as leader of the party. And I'm really looking forward now to getting stuck into the work, continuing to deliver in government and preparing ourselves for the upcoming general election.
And as you go into that period of the general election preparations, and the party obviously did really, really badly in the local elections and in the European elections, what are your objectives?
Well, we had disappointing results in the local elections. We lost some really good councillors. We also topped the poll in parts of the city as well. So I think it's just important to put that in context.
Really bad in rural context. I mean, I think even the person who was running against you, Pippa Hackett, said that you needed to do something in rural Ireland. And that's why she got quite a substantial vote, actually, against you. You only won by, I think, 72 votes at the end.
And we need to reach out to many parts of the country. We need to reach out to rural Ireland. We need to reach out to working class parts of the country as well. We lost votes there too. And I've been very clear, that's my priority as leader. We need to bring forward the policies that are seen to have a meaningful impact, make a difference in people's lives. I think too many people, when they see their Green Party candidate, they see someone who's focused on the environment, focused on those long-term climate goals. And we are focused on those, absolutely. Those are the reason for being for the Green Party. But we are also, as a party, very aware of the need to support people in their daily lives. That's what I've done as minister. I asked for the department that I took on because it gives the opportunity to have a meaningful impact on people's lives, halving the cost of childcare for tens of thousands of parents all over the country, bringing in new paid leave for parents so they can spend more time with their kids in those early weeks and months, bringing in paid domestic violence leave for victims of DSGBV. These are all Green Party policies, not necessarily environmental policies, but making a meaningful impact.
Social
policies. That are so important.
Yeah, and I did notice that in your comments about the campaign to secure the leadership. You said you based your campaign on widening the appeal of the party beyond the traditional green values and placing more emphasis on policies around social justice and equality. But does that not sound a bit like, look, the green policies, the environmental ones don't work, they're not a vote getter, and so I'm just going to go over and do this social justice stuff now?
No, absolutely not. As I said, the measures we need to take to tackle climate change, to deal with the loss of biodiversity, they will always be absolutely at the core of this party. But we have to understand that for a lot of people right now, they mightn't be the number one priority in their lives today. If you're talking to somebody whose child is waiting for an assessment of need, for example, it doesn't matter how passionate that person is about climate, getting that assessment of need for their kid is the most important thing in their life and will determine their political direction. And we need to be very clear that we are bringing forward policy solutions for people all over the country, no matter what particular issue they're facing.
So in that, what are your priorities for the remainder of government?
My priorities for the remainder of government are, first of all, the budget coming up in the next number of weeks. I want to make sure, like the last four budgets, that it's socially progressive, that it gives the most to those who have least, that it focuses on investment in public services. I'm very aware within my department of the challenges of demographics. We've got an ageing population. People are living longer, and that's fantastic. But that places challenges on our public services. And at a time when we do have a budget surplus, I want to make sure that we're using our money to invest in growing those public services so we can support more people. A couple of key legislative pieces we want to enact before this government comes to the end. Marine planning areas to make sure we can improve biodiversity off our coasts. The hate crime legislation.
Can I ask you about that one? Sorry to interrupt
absolutely.
You and I will let you continue.
Yeah.
I'm sorry for interrupting you. But I hate when people do that. But the hate crime bill, you really want that passed. Mm-hmm. Why? It's so controversial. It's causing so much problem for the other parties. Why are you insisting?
Because last year, 651 people were victims of hate crimes in this country, and that's the ones that were reported. So minority communities are being targeted. This is a law and order issue. We are one of the very few countries in Ireland that doesn't have hate crime legislation, and I think it was supported by almost all parties in the Dáil only a couple of months ago. It's in the Senedd now. I know Minister McEntee is looking to bring some amendments forward to provide reassurance, to deal with some of the concerns that were raised over the last number of months. That's great. Let's get those amendments passed. But let's get this key piece of legislation on the statute books and reassure our minority communities that we will never allow them be singled out, targeted for crimes just on the basis of who they are.
Now, you mentioned all the social justice issues and the progress that you made within your department. The other thing that you had to deal with in your department was obviously immigration, mm-hmm. which has been a massive issue for you. I think you've actually dealt with it very well in difficult circumstances. And a lot of the time, I felt you were dealing with it on your own and that the cabinet didn't necessarily support you maybe until it came to a critical point. Did you ever feel like that?
Well, we've had to deal with a scale of movement of people that's been unknown in Ireland and really unknown across most of Europe in the last 50 years. We've provided accommodation in Ireland for over 100,000 people in the last 2 years. And look, it hasn't always been easy. And look, the state's response hasn't always been perfect. But we have been able to provide that accommodation. And the vast majority of people for whom we have provided accommodation do recognise
the huge efforts
Ireland
has made. But until Simon Harris came in and took over as Taoiseach, it largely seemed like you were dealing with that on your own.
There was, and there remains a cross-government response to this issue. We wouldn't have been able to provide accommodation for the 100,000 people we accommodated without that cross-government response.
So you're happy with the support that you got from your colleagues?
I'm happy with the cross-government response that we were able to bring forward. We've done something that no other Irish government was ever asked to do. I think we've accommodated people, numbers that people would never have thought was possible. And I think we have to understand now, in terms of continuing to manage that large amount of accommodation, make sure we have accommodation options for people who continue to arrive. But also, and one thing I've been very clear on, we need to move away from that over-reliance on the private sector. The state has to recognise there are going to be higher levels of migration in Ireland going forward, as in all European countries, and we need a core of state-owned accommodation where we've more control over costs and more control over where it's located.
And that comes back to those four big centres that were promised. What's the status of them? And, you know, when do you see the timetable for the public to know about where they're going to be?
Well, when I published the comprehensive accommodation strategy in late March, I set out we are looking to develop a core of 14,000 state-owned beds over the next number of years. And to be quite frank, that'll be a lot more than four centres. It's going to be a significant number.
Any idea how many?
We're already securing state-owned land, and that was the key change that I've been able to, the key policy change that I've been able to get agreement on over the last number of weeks. That state-owned land will be provided to enable us to provide short-term accommodation initially, and that's what we're seeing in Crookslane, in Trudder, soon on Thornton Hall, short-term tented accommodation. It's not what we want to be providing, but it gives an immediate response to people who previously were sleeping rough. And we then use that site to bring in longer-term solutions in terms of looking at rapid build, looking at modular. So that work is already starting. And since that policy was introduced, over 1,000 people who previously were without an offer of accommodation have been provided with accommodation.
Minister, I want to turn to the wider issue of government. You've said that you're not going to reshuffle the departments with the Green ministers in it. Is that right?
It's correct, yeah. We have.
Is that not a bit of a wasted opportunity from your own point politically, if nothing else?
It's not. We've at max 8 months left in this term of government. We have three cabinet colleagues, Catherine, Eamon and Pippa, who are performing, I believe, magnificently within their departments. They know them inside out. They know what are the policy challenges. They know what are the last pieces of legislation we want to get over the line over the next number of months. And similarly, our ministers ministers of state are performing really well. So I think right now what we need is stability. What we need right now is people who know the role and know how we can get the last pieces of benefit out of those roles as we come towards a general election.
But even Eamon Ryan, he's in charge of what, three or four departments in one. Would you not have said, look, I'm going to go into transport and take over a senior ministry just, you know, for the last 8 months and give it a final push?
Well, I have enough senior ministries already now, to be honest. And Eamon is doing such a good job in terms of the additional investment in public transport, in terms of supporting the development of a major offshore renewable energy revolution. Again, I think our ministers are doing a really good job. They have my full confidence. And I know they'll continue to deliver up to when the general election is called.
And the Dublin traffic plan, that's going to go ahead?
Yeah, well, obviously that's a decision for Dublin City Council. And I think, you know, we have to remember that these are decisions taken at a local basis and the Dublin City Councillors.
But how do you feel about your government colleague, Eimear Higgins, making a petition on behalf of the business owners?
Well, look, I suppose any government minister can petition how they want to. But ultimately, this is a decision for our city councillors, people who are elected only a couple of weeks ago, who know very clearly the desires of Dubliners in terms of responding to the huge amount of congestion we see in our city and making it easier for people who have a journey within the city, who are actually travelling to get into our city to make those journeys. Look, as Minister for Disability, I'm engaging with disability groups, some of whom have raised concerns, and I think it's really important when you bring a new change, you're listening and you're improving the changes you make as you go along. But fundamentally, if we don't make significant changes to how traffic operates in our city, the entire city will grind to a halt, and that won't benefit anybody: the pedestrian, the cyclist, the bus user, or the motorist.
Minister, it's a very proud day for you and your family to become leader of a party. It always is. I just wanted to look at some statistics from the Green Party. It was an online vote, is that right?
Yes, online. Yeah.
So there's 3,425 members who were eligible to vote and only 1,800 and something voted. Do you think that says something about the engagement within the Green Party? Or what does it say about it?
So we had a 55% turnout, which I think is almost the exact same
online,
as the turnout.
Though, like, should not more people?
I think it was very similar to the turnout we saw in the leadership election in 2020, and it's significantly increased on. We had a party chair election about a year ago, and it's a significant increase on that. Look, I thought it was a really engaged campaign. I'm really glad we had a contest. I think myself and Pippa had the opportunity to debate and explore the opportunities and the challenges that the party faces right now. I think it was a really good tempered campaign. And look, as both myself and Pippa said at the announcement this morning, we look forward to continuing to work really hard together. The party is united. The party is proud of what we've achieved over the last 4 years in government, but conscious now we need to get ready for a general election and bring forward policies that very clearly demonstrate our long-term commitments to meeting those climate objectives, but also being able to make very meaningful differences to people's lives.
Well, Minister O'Gorman, listen, we wish you well with your leadership of the Green Party and your future endeavours in government. Thank you very much for coming into us today.
Thanks for having me.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.